this, as they say, is the BBC, who are tickled to bits to bring to thee Marriott's monologues, funny and clean, the best monologue writer that there's ever been. So listen and laugh, join in and take part in Marriott Edgar's Works of Art.
We present Marriott's Monologues, the monologues of Marriott Edgar. Accompanied on the piano by Brian Fitzgerald, here is this week's monologist, Betty Driver, with The Owl in the Ark.
One evening at dusk, as Noah stood on his ark, putting green oil in starboard side lamp, his wife came along and said, "Noah, summat's wrong. Our cabin is getting quite damp." Noah said, "Is that so?" Then he went down below and found it were right what she'd said. For there on the floor, quite a puddle he saw. It was slopping around under the bed. Said he, "There's a hole in the bottom somewhere. We must find it before we retire." Then he thought for a bit, and he said, "Ah, that's it. A bloodhound is what we require." So he went and fetched bloodhound from place where it lay, between the skunk and the polecat it were. And as things there below were a trifle so-so, it were glad of a breath of fresh air. They followed the hound as it went sniffing round, till at last they located the leak. 'Twere a small hole inside, about 2 inches wide, where a swordfish had poked in its beak. By gum, how the wet squirted in through that hole! Well, young Shem, who at sums was expert, worked it out on his slate that it came at the rate of per gallon, per second, per squirt. The bloodhound tried hard to keep water in check by lapping it up with his tongue, but it came in so fast through that hole that at last he shoved in his nose for a bung. The poor faithful hound, he were very near drowned. They dragged him away none too soon, for the stream as it rose pushed its way up his nose and blew him out like a balloon. And then Mrs. Noah shoved her elbow in Thole and said, "Eh, it stopped, I believe." But they found very soon as she altered her tune, for the water had gone up her sleeve. When she saw as her elbow weren't doing much good, she said to Noah, "I've an idea. You sit on the leak, and by the end of the week, there's no knowing, the weather may clear." Noah didn't think much of this notion at all, but he reckoned he'd give it a try. On the hole down he flopped, and the leaking all stopped, and all except him were quite dry. They took him his breakfast and dinner and tea, as day after day there he sat, till the rain were all past and they landed at last on top side of Mount Ararat. And that is how Noah got 'em all safe ashore. But ever since then, strange to tell, them as helped save the ark has all carried a mark, and all the descendants as well. That's why dog has a cold nose and ladies cold elbows. You'll also find, if you inquire, that's why a man takes his coattails in hand and stands with his back to the fire. Oh, hey, it's a lovely one, is that, isn't it? Do you know, I've been listening to this series, and all the artists that have been doing these monologues, I think they only ever heard Stanley Holloway on records, but I think I'm the only one that's really worked with him in person. And I did a very big show with Stanley. He was a lovely man. I loved him dearly. And I worked with him for about, 20 weeks. It was super when he did these lovely monologues. He absolutely enthralled the audiences. The place where we did them was Blackpool, which was an absolute perfect venue for Albert and the Lion and the Ramsbottoms and all that. And the thing that got me that after he'd done all these gorgeous monologues, he finished with that fabulous song, Brown Boots, which made me cry every night. I like this next one too. It features that famous Marriott Edgar character, Sam Small, in Sam's Racehorse. When Sam Small retired from the army, he'd a pension of 9 pence a day and £7.14 he'd saved from his rations and pay. He knew this here wasn't a fortune, but reckoned with prudence and care, he'd find some investment to save him from hard work and things like that there. He thought he'd invest in a racehorse, as apart from excitement and fun, he'd be able to sit down in comfort and live on the money he won. He knew buying horses was tricky, but that didn't daunt him at all. He said they must rise early in the morning as want to play tricks on Sam Small. When he called on the local horse dealer, surprise rooted him to the spot, for he found 'twere his old company sergeant, whose kindness he'd never forgot. 'Twere a happy reunion on both sides. Their pleasure at meeting was great, for each hoped to diddle the other and wipe a few grudges off slate. The sergeant brought out his racehorses, for which he asked various sums. They hadn't a tooth left between them. Sam knew their age by the gums. Sam studied their lines and deportment as sergeant were trotting them round, and told him he reckoned their value were 4 pence per racehorse per pound. The sarge, he had a filly called Buster, as he hadn't said nothing about. But when Sam turned his nose up at t'others, he thought as he'd best trot her out. Sam was struck with her youthful appearance, though there wasn't much light in the place, for her teeth were all pearly and even, and there wasn't a line on her face. The sergeant asked Sam 20 guineas, but Sam, who were up to his tricks, pretended he thought he'd said shillings and offered him 18 and 6. In the end, he paid 8 guineas for her, and when he got home with the goods, he reckoned he'd not done so badly, for 3 of the guineas were duds. But later, when he thought it over, a doubt through his mind seemed to creep. If Buster were all she were painted, why, the sergeant had sold her so cheap. He very soon found out the answer when he looked at her close in a stall. She'd the marks where her face had been lifted, and her mouth full of false teeth and all. The little walk home had fatigued her, and the cold air had started a cough. Sam reckoned he'd best see the sergeant and tell him the bargain was off. The place were locked up when he got there, and he realised the sergeant had bunked. So back he went home in a dudgeon and found Buster lying defunct. Sam knew if he wanted to sell her, he mustn't let on she were dead. So he raffled her down at the darts club, 40 members at 5 bob a head. The raffle was highly successful. They all came in, every man Jack, and so's winner'd have no cause to grumble. Sam gave him his 5 shillings back. I'm going to do a nice little one now about pubs. And pubs have really meant a lot in my life. You see, I had a pub of my own, and my sister Frieda and my dad, well, we ran this pub, and it was wonderful. If only we could have got scriptwriters to write all the marvellous things that were said in those places. And, of course, now I'm in the Rover's Return and I'm pulling pints like there's no tomorrow. But anyway, you all know that. And I just hope that you're going to enjoy this last little monologue, which is the last one in the series, and it's called George and the Dragon. I'll tell you the tale of an old country pub as fancied itself up to date. It had the word garage wrote on stable door and a petrol pump outside at gate. The George and the Dragon were the name of the pub, and it stood in a spot wild and bleak, where nought ever seemed to be passing that way except carrier's cart once a week. The carrier's cart were a sturdy old Ford, and its driver were known as Old Joe. He'd pass pub each week, but he'd never been in. Its name even he didn't know. One cold winter night, about 1:15, he were driving home over the moor, and had just reached the pub when his engine stopped dead, a thing it had ne'er done before. He lifted the bonnet and fiddled around and gave her a bit of a crank. When he looked at his petrol, he found what were wrong. There wasn't a drop in the tank. He had 8 miles to go, and 'twas starting to rain, and he thought he were there for the night, till he saw the word garage wrote on the stable door. Then he said, "Lizzie, lass, we're all right." He went up to the pub, and he hammered at door, till a voice up above said, "Hello!" It were publican's wife. She said, "Now, what's to do?" "I've run out of petrol," said Joe. She said, "Who are you?" He said, "Carrier Joe." "Oh, so that's who it is," she replied. "You've been passing this door now for close on 10 years and never once set foot inside." "A nice time o' night to come knocking folks up," she continued, "away with your truck. You best get your petrol where you buy your beer. You only come here when you're stuck." Said Joe, "Aye, I'll go if you'll sell me some fuel. I can't start me engine without. I'm willing to pay," but she told him to go where he'd get his fuel for nought. "Come, come, lass," said Joe, conciliatory like, "let bygones be bygones, and when I come round next time I'll look in." She said, "Oh, well, your petrol can wait until then." With these few remarks, the old girl took in her head and slammed window two in his face. He took a look round, and for the very first time he noticed the name of the place. He picked up some pebbles he'd found in the road and tossed them against window pane. And before very long, lattice opened above and out came the old girl again. "What do you want?" she inquired. "Not you," Joe replied, for this treatment had fair raised his gorge. "I see George and Dragon's the name on the house. I'd just like a word now with George."
Betty Driver brought you The Owl in the Ark, Sam's Racehorse, and George and the Dragon by Marriott Edgar. Piano accompaniment was by Brian Fitzgerald. Marriott's Monologues is produced in Manchester by Mike Craig.